Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to chapter 24 today, but before I jump in and start reading, I want to say a big thanks to those who shared the podcast. Had a couple of new subscribers over the last day or so, and I can also see there's a little bit of a spike in the amount of listens, about an extra 30 or so over the last 24 hours. So someone out there has shared the podcast, and I thank you very much for doing that. As usual, I'm going to start today's podcast by reading the chapter that we're up to, and that will be followed by a discussion. Okay, here we go. This is chapter 24 of Book 1 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. There was now no one in the reception room except Prince Vasily and the eldest princess, who were sitting under the portrait of Catherine the Great and talking eagerly. As soon as they saw Pierre and his companion, they became silent, and Pierre thought he saw the princess hide something as she whispered, "I can't bear the sight of that woman." "Catiche has had tea served in the small drawing room," said Prince Vasily to Anna Mikhailovna. "Go and take something, my poor Anna Mikhailovna, or you will not hold out." To Pierre he said nothing, merely giving his arm a sympathetic squeeze below the shoulder. Pierre went with Anna Mikhailovna into the small drawing room. There is nothing so refreshing after a sleepless night as a cup of delicious Russian tea, Lorraine was saying with an air of restrained animation as he stood sipping tea from a delicate Chinese handleless cup before a table on which tea and a cold supper were laid in the small circular room. Around the table, all who were at Count Bezukhov's house that night had gathered to fortify themselves. Pierre well remembered this small circular drawing room, with its mirrors and little tables. During balls given at the house, Pierre, who did not know how to dance, had liked sitting in this room to watch the ladies, who, as they passed through in their ball dresses with diamonds and pearls on their bare shoulders, looked at themselves in the brilliantly lighted mirrors which repeated their reflections several times. Now this same room was dimly lighted by two candles. On one small table, tea things and supper dishes stood in disorder. And in the middle of the night a motley throng of people sat there, not merrymaking, but somberly whispering and betraying by every word and movement that they none of them forgot what was happening and what was about to happen in the bedroom. Pierre did not eat anything, though he would very much have liked to. He looked inquiringly at his monitress and saw that she was again going on tiptoe to the reception room where they had left Prince Vasily and the eldest princess. Pierre concluded that this also was essential, and, after a short interval, followed her. Anna Mikhailovna was standing beside the princess, and they were both speaking in excited whispers. "Permit me, princess, to know what is necessary and what is not necessary," said the younger of the two speakers, evidently in the same state of excitement as when she had slammed the door of her room. "But, my dear princess," answered Anna Mikhailovna, blandly but impressively, blocking the way to the bedroom and preventing the other from passing. "Won't this be too much for poor uncle at a moment when he needs repose? Worldly conversation at a moment when his soul is already prepared." Prince Vasily was seated in an easy chair in his familiar attitude, with one leg crossed high above the other. His cheeks, which were so flabby that they looked heavier below, were twitching violently. But he wore the air of a man little concerned in what the two ladies were saying. "Come, my dear Anna Mikhailovna, let Catiche do as she pleases. You know how fond the Count is of her." "I don't even know what is in this paper," said the younger of the two ladies, addressing Prince Vasily and pointing to an inlaid portfolio she held in her hand. "All I know is that his real will is in his writing table, and this is a paper he has forgotten." She tried to pass Anna Mikhailovna, but the latter sprang so as to bar her path. "I know, my dear, kind princess," said Anna Mikhailovna, seizing the portfolio so firmly that it was plain she would not let go easily. "Dear princess, I beg and implore you, have some pity on him. Je vous en conjure." The princess did not reply. Their efforts in the struggle for the portfolio were the only sounds audible. But it was evident that if the princess did speak, her words would not be flattering to Anna Mikhailovna. Though the latter held on tenaciously, her voice lost none of its honeyed firmness and softness. "Pierre, my dear, come here. I think he will not be out of place in a family consultation. Is it not so, Prince?" "Why do you speak, cousin?" suddenly shrieked the princess, so loud that those in the drawing-room heard her and were startled. "Why do you remain silent when heaven knows who permits herself to interfere, making a scene on the very threshold of a dying man's room? Intriguer!" she hissed viciously, and tugged with all her might at the portfolio. But Anna Mikhailovna went forward a step or two to keep her hold on the portfolio, and changed her grip. Prince Vasily rose. "Oh," said he with reproach and surprise, "this is absurd. Come, let go, I tell you." The princess let go. "And you too." But Anna Mikhailovna did not obey him. "Let go, I tell you. I will take the responsibility. I myself will go and ask him. I. Does that satisfy you?"
"But, Prince," said Anna Mikhailovna, "after such a solemn sacrament, allow him a moment's peace. Here, Pierre, tell them your opinion," said she, turning to the young man who, having come quite close, was gazing with astonishment at the angry face of the princess, which had lost all dignity, and at the twitching cheeks of Prince Vasily.
"Remember that you will answer for the consequences," said Prince Vasily, severely. "You don't know what you are doing."
"Vile woman!" shouted the princess,
darting unexpectedly at Anna Mikhailovna and snatching the portfolio from her. Prince Vasily bent his head and spread out his hands. At this moment, that terrible door which Pierre had watched so long and which had always opened so quietly, burst noisily open and banged against the wall, and the second of the three sisters rushed out, wringing her hands.
"What are you doing?" she cried vehemently. "He is dying and you leave me alone with him?"
Her sister dropped the portfolio. Anna Mikhailovna, stooping, quickly caught up the object of contention and ran into the bedroom. The eldest princess and Prince Vasily, recovering themselves, followed her. A few minutes later the eldest sister came out, the pale, hard face, again biting her underlip. At sight of Pierre her expression showed an irrepressible hatred.
"Yes, now you may be glad," said she. "This is what you have been waiting for."
And, bursting into tears, she hid her face in her handkerchief and rushed from the room. Prince Vasily came next. He staggered to the sofa on which Pierre was sitting and dropped onto it, covering his face with his hand. Pierre noticed that he was pale and that his jaw quivered and shook as if in an ague. "Ah, my friend," said he, taking Pierre by the elbow, and there was in his voice a sincerity and weakness Pierre had never observed in it before. "How often we sin, how much we deceive, and all for what? I am nearly 60, dear friend. I too, all will end in death, all. Death is awful." He burst into tears. Anna Mikhailovna came out at last. She approached Pierre with slow, quiet steps.
"Pierre," she said.
Pierre gave her an inquiring look. She kissed the young man on his forehead, wetting him with her tears. Then, after a pause, she said,
"He is no more."
Pierre looked at her over his spectacles.
"Come, I will go with you. Try to weep. Nothing gives such relief as tears."
She led him into the dark drawing-room, and Pierre was glad no one could see his face. Anna Mikhailovna left him, and when she returned he was fast asleep with his head on his arm. In the morning, Anna Mikhailovna said to Pierre,
"Yes, my dear, this is a great loss for us all, not to speak of you. But God will support you. You are young, and are now, I hope, in command of an immense fortune.
The will has not yet been opened. I know you well enough to be sure that this will not turn your head, but it imposes duties on you, and you must be a man." Pierre was silent. "Perhaps later on I may tell you, my dear boy, that if I had not been there, God only knows what would have happened.
You know, Uncle promised me only the day before yesterday not to forget Boris. But he had no time. I hope, my dear friend, you will carry out your father's wish. Pierre understood nothing of all this, and, colouring shyly, looked in silence at Prince Anna Mikhailovna. After her talk with Pierre, Anna Mikhailovna returned to the Rostovs and went to bed. On waking in the morning, she told the Rostovs and all her acquaintances the details of Count Bezukhov's death. She said the Count had died as she would herself wish to die, that his end was not only touching but edifying. As to the last meeting between father and son, it was so touching that she could not think of it without tears, and did not know which had behaved better during those awful moments, the father, who so remembered everything and everybody at the last and had spoken such pathetic words to her son, or Pierre, whom it had been pitiful to see, so stricken was he with grief, though he tried hard to hide it in order not to sadden his dying father. It is painful, but it does one good. It uplifts the soul to see such men as the old Count and his worthy son, said she. Of the behaviour of the eldest princess and Prince Vasily, she spoke disapprovingly, but in whispers, and as a great secret. All right, there we have it. Phew, what a chapter, eh? I think what we just saw, what we just experienced, was the veil being removed entirely. The facade of politeness and worry and everything, or what was remaining of it, was completely stripped away. And we saw what was truly going on and what has been truly going on for the last few chapters. And that is quite simply squabbling over an inheritance. And I mean, they weren't holding on to exactly the will, but they might as well have been. And, you know, we've got these two characters, the two princesses, Anna and the niece of the Count, holding on to this document and both refusing to let go. Almost rather childish in some ways. I quite enjoyed how Anna Mikhailovna can almost maintain her facade of friendliness and politeness even during a tug-of-war battle with someone over a document. And of course, in the end, she manages to get her hands on the document, the letter to the emperor that would legitimize Pierre. And while this is going on, the poor old Count dies. So my understanding of this chapter and this last few chapters here has been that Prince Vasily believes that if he can just show the Count this letter that he's written and sort of remind him about it, the Count will go, oh, you know, don't worry about that letter. I wrote that when I was angry. Stick to the will. That seems to be Vasily's belief. I mistakenly thought that he was trying to hide the document or destroy the document, but it was actually his goal to show it to the Count and sort of, I suppose, find out whether the Count wanted to honour it or not. And now what I gather is that since he has died, he can no longer dispute the letter. The letter stands because it's the most recent document. It begs the question, was Anna really just trying to delay everything long enough for the Count to die without having disputed the letter? And I think she probably was, because she's definitely on Team Pierre. She wants Pierre to get the inheritance. And she knows that if the Count doesn't get to see the letter, then it stands. But if he does get to see it, it may or may not stand. So as far as she's concerned, it's better if he just doesn't get the chance to dispute the letter. I'm not sure if I've got that right there, but that was my interpretation of what just happened. One Reddit user, less than insightful, asked the question, should Anna receive similar respect to that of the wartime strategist Napoleon? I'm starting to see this aspect as an example of a warlike scenario taking place in a peaceful setting. Perhaps the novel will evolve to demonstrate peaceful actions amidst scenes of war, depicting somewhat of a duality of man parable. Can't wait to read on. It could be an interesting thing to watch and see if we have this yin and yang, peace in the time of war and war in the time of peace. Reddit user Who Was Once Delight asked the question, after the struggle is over and Vasily and Katish seem defeated, Vasily confronts Pierre with sincerity and weakness, crying, we win so much, we deceive so much, and all for what? I'm over 50, my friend. Everything ends in death. Everything. Death is terrible. What do you make of this speech? I think the version quoted there is the PNV version. You'll notice it was a little bit different from what we read. Particularly the bit he says, I'm over 50. And I believe in the Maud translation we just read, it said, I'm almost 60. I'll double check that. Yeah, it does. It says, I am near 60, dear friend. I suppose that's kind of interesting to note. In response to this question, what to make of the Prince's speech, Reddit user OriginalCJ5 said, this showed how much the Prince cared about acquiring the wealth for himself, and is truly dejected after the defeat. Reddit user Lowdown said, I was surprised about the Prince as well, but then I figured he was mentally exhausted after all this time scheming. Sonic Vroom said, the same is true with Anna. She was dauntless in protecting Pierre, but after the inheritance was settled, she went straight to sleep and didn't recount the events until the next day. Another point of view was put forward by Reddit user CJerk, who said, interesting, I read the Prince's reaction as pretty sincere, like he had just seen a man die and it kind of shocked him, enough to see how selfish he was being. I think personally I saw it a little bit that way too. He did fight tooth and nail to secure this inheritance, but once the game was over, once the whole thing was settled, he seemed to speak pretty earnestly to Pierre after that. And I think he was quite genuinely sorrowful, I suppose. He was sad about the Count's death. He was sad about his own age. He was mentally exhausted and physically exhausted from the ordeal. And I suppose disappointed that he was seemingly going to leave empty-handed for his troubles. You know, it was almost like at the end of a sporting match. You might be fierce rivals during the match, but once it's over, the rivalry sort of disappears and there's a bit of room for honesty at that point. Reddit user Lord Mighty Kabunga said, the previous chapters described how Prince Vasily was getting more sickly as days passed. His face grew pale and thinner and overall tired. I wonder if those symptoms were an indication of stress over worrying about the dying Count's health condition and the reminder of death, the end of every endeavour in earthly life, or was he simply worried he will leave empty-handed? Tough to say, once again. And Tolstoy really doesn't give too much away, does he, with his characters? He leaves everything open-ended. You never know their true intentions. Lord Mighty Kabunga went on to say, I think Anna resembles Napoleon in that they both started after hitting rock bottom and using every possible means to rise up. Napoleon is Antichrist, as he risked everything he once owned while overtaking the heavenly written position of the king. But he got the support of the people as he protected them from foreign invaders. Anna is seen as a shameless mother who is about to lose her social capital, but keeps moving forward to protect her son and show herself as a person who can't tolerate injustice by protecting Pierre's fortune in the process. Yeah, I'm certainly becoming more and more impressed with Anna Mikhailovna with every chapter that passes. Definitely the kind of lady that you want on your side in any kind of battle. And lastly, there was a good comment from Sardonicus09, who said, at the end of it all, I'm left questioning what the true intentions of the Count were with his will. He wrote the Pierre letter when angry at the princesses, but never sent it. Perhaps he cooled down, changed his mind, or perhaps just hadn't made a decision. Apparently just the existence of the letter was enough to invalidate the previous will, but perhaps it's possible he just forgot to destroy it. Or, am I just overthinking this? The letter was written, the Count smiled paternally at Pierre, knowing his end was near, and over the previous years he was making quite a bit of effort to prepare Pierre for the world. Perhaps Pierre was the true intended heir after all. That about sums it up. I guess we don't know. And you've got to kind of feel for poor old Pierre. Because if we'll never know, I suppose he'll never really know for sure either. He's now aware what the letter says, but he's also aware that it was written in anger. And he's aware that Prince Vasily believes that the Count would have retracted the letter had he been reminded about it. I think that's certainly the kind of lingering question that could really plague a young man. But the only way to find out is to read on, I suppose. So we shall do that in tomorrow's episode. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.